Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Nun Dal. We're Nun Gimel Amud Beis. We're at the top of the Amud, towards the top of the Amud. Suffolk Drusus have been our topic. Drusus has really been our topic for the last couple of days. The Gemara yesterday talked about an animal that was clawed by a predator. The Gemara has an assumption, a general assumption, which is a little bit hard to explain based on our empirical knowledge of animals nowadays. But we're working on the Gemara's terms. And the Gemara is assuming that not only do snakes, but other predatory animals insert venom into their prey. And in doing so, will render their, it's a way they're going to kill their prey, and they'll be able to eat their prey. So what are these predatory animals that have venom, and have eris, and insert them into the prey? So basically, for animals, the predatory animals are extensive. There's a ze'ev, there's a ari. There's a smaller predatory animals as well, the chatul, the cat, and an assortment of other types, a weasel, assortment of other type of predatory animals. And so when they claw the victim and they insert the eris into the victim, so that'll render the victim a trefa. By birds as well, we learned in the Mishnah that you have the predatory birds, you have the gnats, which may or may not be the hawk. Falcon, hawk, okay, whatever. Whatever it is, right? The Rashi called it the spurrier, but anyway. So the if I have the nates, then same thing, same story with the nates as well. In other words, it's going to grab and claw its victim and insert its eris into the victim and kill the victim. What about Suffolk Drusa? So that was the Gemara yesterday. Machlokus between Rav and Shmuel regarding Suffolk Drusa. On the bottom of Nin Gimel Amud Aleph, the Gemara introduced us to a machlokus between the two, whether or not a Suffolk Drusa is acceptable or not acceptable. The case under discussion of Suffolk Drusa, well, the one case that we discussed yesterday, where we had a lion go into the pen of an ox or oxen, and we don't exactly know what happened. There was a little screaming and shouting. Discussion yesterday, who was doing the screaming and shouting? But anyway, something may or may not have happened. We're not sure. And what do we say under those circumstances? So we learned yesterday the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel on this very topic. Rav being a mekel, Rav being lenient, and Shmuel being machmer. And the Gemara now is introducing us to, as we turn to the top of Nun Gimel Amud Beis and picking it up where we left off yesterday. So the Amalei Rav Ashila Meimer Haider Rav Mai. So we did this yesterday, but I'll just quickly recap again. So five lines from the top of the Amud, four lines from the top of the Amud. So Amalei Rav Ashila Meimer Haider Rav Mai. So in other words, so a Meimer who ruled stringently on the matter like Shmuel. So the question was posed to him, well, what about the opinion of Rav? So Amalei Lo Shmili Klamer Lo Shmili. So he says, I don't know from it, which is a nice way of saying I don't hold from it. So the Ibai say Mahadar Bay Rav Lagabi Shmuel. Or another possibility is as follows. And that is that Rav retracted. Rav retracted his position and ended up ruling like Shmuel. And how do I know that? How do I know that Rav in fact retracted? So the Gemara tells the following episode. Dehahu Shirakfa the Suffolk Drusa Dasal Kame Derav. So there was a basket of birds. A basket of birds where there was a possible clawing of these birds, and we don't know. And so when the birds were taken over to Rav and given over to Rav, so what did Rav do with these baskets of birds? So now we're talking about a Suffolk Drusa. Possibly they were clawed. So if Rav was consistent with his position, so what should he have ruled? It's okay. It's mutter. Meanwhile, what did he do? So the Gemara tells the story. Ahu shrakfa de Suffolk Drusa stasel kame de Rav. So he sent them over to Shmuel. In other words, he literally forwarded all these birds over to Shmuel so that Shmuel can render a decision. Now, what was Shmuel's decision? Well, we know he's going to be Machmir, but to the degree in which he was Machmir is certainly interesting. Chankinu, he choked all these birds to death. Vishadina b'nahara, and he threw them into the river. In other words, they were trefos, and he wanted everyone to know that they were trefos. Now, Isak Adacha, the Gemara says, Loha derbe l'shinu. So the Gemara says, now let's make the argument. Seems to be a good argument. Seems to be. And the argument is that we see that Rav had to have been chozer from his position. Because had Rav not been chozer from his position, and had he maintained consistently that a Suffolk Drusa is in fact mutter, so his decision on these birds is that they should be mutter, because all we're looking at over here is a Suffolk Drusa, and we know Rav was mekel, and so why wasn't he mekel under those circumstances? So the Gemara says, okay, it's a good argument, but it's not a great argument. Let's consider. If in fact he reverses position, so what should he have done? He should have been machmir, and he should have paskened that the birds are aser. But that's not what happened. What happened is he took the birds and he forwarded them over to Shmuel. So elamai hader be lisrinu. So the Gemara says, so why does he just aser them? So the Gemara says, so it must be like this. Really, the truth of the matter is Rav did not retract from his position. And Rav really felt that you should be mekel, and it really should be mutter. So why didn't Rav issue a psak? And why did he give the birds over to Shmuel so that Shmuel would render a psak? So Ella asrei de Shmuel hava. So the Gemara says it must be that the entire incident happened in the town of Shmuel, in the makom of Shmuel. Rashi over here writes. And Rashi offers two pshatim over here. We're going to look at Rashi's first pshat. Rashi's first pshat asrei de Shmuel hava. V'lav orech ara l'uruye kamei be'asrei bedaver shehin shavin bo. So It is not derech eretz to issue a psak on something in which they shein shavim bo, in which they are equals. Aval ihave pligi ba lohayim eshad lehu kamei lahafsid mamon yisrael dechomakum sheish nidun chait ein chokin kavol arav. But Rashi writes interestingly. But if he really legitimately held that if he was really cholek, so then he would have paskin because he would not have wanted to have created a loss. Meaning in Rashi's first pshat, the Gemara does not necessarily say that Rav actually retracted. In Rashi's first pshat, let me say it better. In Rashi's first pshat, Rav really did retract, but the reason why he didn't issue a ruling is because at a cover of Shmuel, so he felt that Shmuel should be the one giving the psak. It was the makom. But in Rashi's first pshat, he writes very clearly that if Rav, in fact, was arguing with Shmuel, so then Rav would have paskin, even though it would have been the makom of Shmuel. That in of itself is interesting. That's the first reading of Rashi. So the second pshat is the way I presented the Gemara, which is that no, really the truth of the matter is that Rav did not retract. And meanwhile, it is not appropriate to issue a dissenting ruling if it's not your locale. If you're not the home team, and this is not your makom, and this is not your town, and even though you may be arguing, nevertheless, you should not be issuing a ruling if you know that the local Rav is ruling against you. Okay. Both sides of the Rashi are super interesting, in which how should one Rav be behaving when he is not on his home turf, and he's in somebody else's community, and he either agrees or disagrees with the local Rav in terms of how he's ruling on a particular issue. Continuing now back to the Gemara, a number of follow-up questions over here with Shmuel. So what did Shmuel do with all these birds that were Safek Drusa? He choked them and he threw them into the river. And the Gemara says, yeah, the Gemara's got a lot of follow-up questions. So the Gemara starts off with the following. I'm sorry, we've read that. Ela Asrei de Shmuel Hava. Lama Leila Mechinkinu Lishtinu Hachi Benahara. So the Gemara's first question is, why did they choke the birds? Why didn't he just throw them into the river? But the answer is pretty straightforward. So Mefarchim V'Salkin. The reason why is because if he just threw them in the river, well, they are birds, they may fly away. Somebody else may capture them and shech them, not realizing that they were Safek Drusa. Okay, good. V'lishinu Shnei Masar Chodesh. So the Gemara says, now why not wait 12 months? Why not wait 12 months and see, in fact, whether or not they are going to be living? Because, again, this goes back to the first discussion that we had in the Perek as to whether or not a trefa is a chaya or a trefa is an eino chaya. We are going to assume right now that a trefa is an eino chaya, meaning that because of the status of being a trefa, that means by definition that you're not going to live for the next 12 months. And now we're just reversing the argument. If you're not living for 12 months, so that means you were a trefa. And if you do survive for more than 12 months, so that means you're not a trefa. So the Gemara wonders now, why didn't Shmuel just simply let them live for 12 months? Now, anytime we have a question in Trefa, is this a valid test? Sounds that way from the Gemara. If you take a look at Rashi over here, this is a major, major discussion. If you take a look at Rashi over here, L'lishinu yud beis chodesh, kidin safek trefa kidalakaman. The way Rashi makes it sound like, you can only do this kind of test if it's a suffek treifa, not if it's a vade treifa. If it's a vade treifa, we cannot see whether or not it's going to be surviving the 12 months. This only works in the case of a suffek treifa. Why only by a suffek treifa, not why by a treifa vade? Okay, major discussion over here, but anyway, why not let them live for 12 months? To which the Gemara says, because if you let these birds hang around for 12 months, at one point or another, somebody's going to forget why it is these birds are just sitting around, right? Why do you have those birds sitting around? I don't know. They look delicious. Let's have them for dinner. So at one point in time or another, so somebody's going to by accident eat the birds, and that's not good. Why not sell them to a guy? Because then what the guy's going to do is turn around and sell them to another Jew, unknowingly, and that unsuspecting Jewish buyer is going to be buying birds, which are a suffek drusa. Now, why not just simply choke them and throw them in the garbage? Why choke them and throw them into the river? Why not throw them to animals or to dogs? So the Gemara says, pierce them because of publicity. The publicity of people knowing that a suffek drusa has to be disposed of and cannot be eaten. Rashi over here is bothered by the following question. Take a look at Rashi lefersume milsa v'chi azal nahare afsha milsa tfei. And by throwing it to the river, so there's more publicity, more people hear about it, and so everyone will know that you're not allowed to eat a suffek drusa. Ulefi sha'ofos dakim hayu umerubim hayu lo yachol abotkan ulahatiram bebedika mimnei hatorach shem yite ba'achas mehem. Rashi is bothered basically by the following question, and Rashi first gives the following answer. Rashi is actually going to give two answers to the question. We will learn momentarily in the Gemara that in the case of a suffek drusa, there is a way to be bodek. A bedika can be performed in order to see and ascertain whether or not the birds are drusa or an eno drusa. This bedika ostensibly works in the case of a suffek, but that's what we're dealing with over here. We're dealing with a suffek. Rashi is basically wondering out loud, why not do a bedika on these birds? Why is Shmuel insistent on killing these birds, disposing them in the river? So why not do a bedika? And Rashi's first answer. So Rashi says that these birds are particularly small, and a bedika on these birds that are so small is not going to result in a positive identification as to whether they are or not a drusa. Inami, Ari Dekal Zihira, Denates, another possibility, says Rashi, is that we're talking about a bird and the venom and the eris injected by a nate, by a predatory bird. And what happens under those circumstances, says Rashi, is that we will not yield a positive result from the testing. Meaning, even though the Gemara will talk about testing and the Gemara is looking for some sort of reddish discoloration internally when we're doing the bedika, that's true when it's an animal predator. But if it's a bird predator, says Rashi, that will not result in a positive detection of whether the animal is or is not a drusa. Two possible answers in terms of why the bird was not examined.
What is it to eat to dogs or something?
Waste some money. The Gemara's answer is Afsha Milsa. I hear you. But that, you're right. And the Gemara says he could have given it to the dogs. But Afsha Milsa, in other words, he wanted to publicize. The Gemara continues. There was a goose or a duck that was in Bay Rav Ashi, Alaveni Kanya. And what happened is that this duck, while walking through the reeds, walked into the reeds, walked out of the reeds, and now a little bit of blood on the neck of the duck. So Nafak Asa ki Mimas Mes Ko E Dama. And so with a little bit of blood now on the neck of the bird. And so a question becomes whether or not the bird is a drusa or not. And we don't know what happened. And once again, we're in the case of suffek. I'm Rav Ashi Lorman, and suffek kava, suffek shruna, emar kava. So Rav Ashi says, look, just a moment earlier, meaning at the beginning of yesterday's daf, did we not say that if we don't know who the predator is, and it's possible that it either was a cat or a dog, so a cat being venomous, a dog being non-venomous, so we said, under those circumstances, we could be mekel. Meaning, even though there's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel regarding suffek, but if it's like, not, if the suffek is, we don't even know if it was clawed by a venomous animal, that's the kind of suffek the Gemara said in yesterday's daf, where everybody agrees, where we could be mekel. The duck walked into the reeds. He walked out. We don't even know whether it was clawed all together. It could very well be that just one of the sharp reeds cut its neck. So hachinami safik kanya safik shunra emar kanya machia. So we can say the same thing over here. Amri b'nei Rebbe Chiya drusa sharmut sricha bedika keneged b'nei me'ayim. Okay, and now here we begin the Gemara's discussion regarding a bedika, meaning in the event that the animal is a drusa. Now again, like I said, a discussion, a major discussion, whether or not this is limited to drusa or just a suffolk drusa. No, this is an area where they agreed, meaning this kind of suffolk is where Rav and Shmuel would agree. Their case of suffolk is where we know there was a predator, right. I'm just not sure whether or not it clawed or did not claw. Okay. The Gemara over here now is going to be talking about a bedika. And you can see the bottom tosis over here. I'm not going to go through it right now. But you can see the bottom tosis, Divrei Maskil, Drusa Shamru, whether or not this bedika is going to be serving and effective in the case of Vadai Drusa or just only in the case of Safek Drusa. So see the bottom tosis for that discussion. But in the meantime, however, to just run through the Gemara. So Amr Debe Bnei Rebbe Chiya, Drusa Shamru, Sricha Bedika, Kenege Bnei Me'ayim. So how much of the animal needs to be checked? We need to check it internally. And we need to go through the Kenegid Bnei Ma'ayim. Anything that faces the intestine. So basically, we're looking at a internal examination and basically along the abdominal cavity. Now, Amar of Yosef had bnei Rebbe Chiya kvar pirsha Shmuel. Now, we already heard this from Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, Trusa Shamut Tzricha Bidigin Keneged Bnei Ma'ayim. So the Gemara says, okay, we already have this from a Tana. So that means to say that, yes, Shmuel's right, but in terms of giving proper attribution, it goes back to the Tanaim. Now, what about an examination for the simanim? Meaning, if let's say the clawing took place in the neck area, so would a bedika work over there regarding that neck area and the simanim, the trachea and the esophagus? So once again, the Gemara says that we have this already going back as a Masorah from Rav. Drusa Sharmut Tzricha Bedika Keneged Beis Chalal Kulo. Ve'afilu B'simanim. So over here we say that an examination needs to be done. And not only are we looking at the entire abdominal cavity, but we're also looking at the neck area as well. By Ilfa Simanim She Nidaldalu. Now over here the Gemara is going to be asking another question of Ilfa. And as Rashi points out over here, this is not related to the previous questions. Previously, we were talking about an animal which is clawed. We were talking about the examination, how much of the interior cavity of the animal needs to be examined. This next question over here is about dildul hasimanim, a dislocation of the simanim, which is a discussion we had earlier in the Masechta, back in the second parak. But in the meantime, the Rashi says that the reason why it's brought in over here is because it follows the same pattern, in which we're going to be stating a question, and the Gemara is going to say that we already know it because of the following that was said in the name of so-and-so. And so since from a pattern standpoint, it follows the previous Gemaras, so therefore it comes up over here. Simanim shenidaldalu, so I'm sorry, by Ilfa, Simanim shenidaldalu bekama, so if we have a dislocation, how much of the trachea needs to be dislocated from its from the place that it's connected to the jaw in order for the animal to be rendered a trefa. I'm Rabbi Zera Hadabai Yilfa Kfar Pirsha Rabba Babachana Damar Rabba Babachana Amar Shmuel. And again, the Gemara says that this was already recorded back to earlier Amoraim. This one goes to back to Shmuel. Simanim Shenadadalu Beruban. So as long as you have most of the, even if you have most of the Simanim detached from it, nevertheless, as long as you still have some attachment, so it is going to be, if the majority of it is detached, it is in fact going to be a trefa. By Rav Ami, ha mas misa mahu. Now, the Gemara over here is asking regarding a drusa, and as Rashi points out over here, we're talking about the drusa of the leg. Meaning up until now, we've been talking about the drusa of the body, and doing an examination of the internal a cavity of the body. But now we're talking about extremities, and over here we're talking about a leg. Right? Rashi writes over here, Kagon Darsa B'Yerech, Shelo Keneged HaChalal, Verinish HaNikev HaBasar La'achar Zman Mahu. And what we're starting to see now is that there seems to be some eris that perhaps was lodged into the leg, because we start to see some of the muscle actually disintegrating. What would be the halacha under those circumstances? Am Rabbi Zera had by Rav Amik for a pirsha. Rav Yehuda dam Rav Yehuda amarav b'drusa ad shiya adim baser keneged bnei me'ayim. So, in terms of a drusa, how do we know that the animal is in fact afflicted with some sort of venom? So, what we're going to be seeing is some discoloration, red discoloration on the interior of the abdominal cavity. Nis masmes abaser. Now, if let's say, instead of the clawing taking place within the body cavity, it took place on one of the extremities like the leg, so there, if we start to see a disintegration of the muscle in that area, so that means to say now that we know that it was clawed by a venomous predator. Now, exactly what is that going to be looking like? I'm a Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua Kol Sha'arofe Gordo Umamido Abasar Chai. If let's say, for example, there is some sort of infection in the body and in the muscle, and the muscle starts decaying, and the skin dart starts decaying, and the muscle dart starts decaying, and you go to the doctor, what the doctor would do is he would scrape away the dead skin and the dead flesh until he got to healthy flesh. So basically, that would be an indication of what it would look like. Amar Rav Ashi Gavina Bei Rav Chanan Aisa Kaman Ayireya Dechiavu Miyasve Le Yasva Shapir. There was a lung that was brought to us. Now, the lung stood up on its own for the most part. However, now we have a little bit of a question of girsa over here. I'm reading on the side. Mitlasa v'nafla tile tile. When we started picking it up, however, it would not pick up as one unit. But basically, pieces would come off of it as we picked it up. It had enough rigidity where it was basically able to stand on its own, but in the event that we tried to pick it up, it fell apart. And v'tarfin ala, mid'Rav Huna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua. And based on the ruling that we saw earlier of Rav Huna b'rei d'Rav Yeshua, where once you see that it lost its rigidity to the point where it can't even stand on its own, it can't even stay together. So under those circumstances, it's like it was Netula, it was like it was taken away. Rav Nachman Amar Bekotza Shitanakiv L'Chalal Berjusa Mishiyadim Basar Keneged Bnei Me'ayim. And Rav Nachman offers the following as a ruling. If let's say there was a puncture that came from the exterior into the interior. So if it's a puncture of a Kotza thorn, or for that matter, anything which is pointy, but of course not venomous, and not inserting any kind of either venom or infection into the animal. So under those circumstances, when is the animal going to be rendered a trefa? When the puncture goes all the way through with the possibility of it puncturing any of the internal organs, the stomachs, the intestines, etc., etc. However, if it's a drusa, mishia dimbasa keneged b'nei me'ayim, you don't need a full puncturing of the, a full penetration to go all the way through. You just simply have where it gets to the point where it's clawed, the exterior of the animal is penetrated. It didn't go all the way through to the interior. Indication that the animal was in fact afflicted is because of the red interior discoloration. Then you know that the animal is a drusa. Now, as far as the neck area is concerned, so the simanim themselves are going to be discolored red. Amar Papi by Rabibi Bar Abaye, Veshet Nikuva So Bemashu, Drusa So Bemashu. Look, when it comes to the esophagus, we know that for a animal to be rendered a trefa, so the smallest puncture in the esophagus will render an animal trefa. We know that when it comes to the Drusa Saveshet, if the veshet gets clawed, so obviously over there nothing changes. The smallest puncture would render the animal trefa. Here's our question of the morning. One of our questions of the morning. When it comes to the windpipe, the trachea. So there, for an animal normally to become a trepha, you need a majority of the trachea to be severed. If the trachea is going to be clawed, does it operate on the same guideline where you need a majority of it to be clawed or no? Maybe because we're talking about drusa over here, where it's inserting a venom, so therefore the shear is going to be a smaller shear. That's the Gemara's question. Veshem b'mekuvas b'mashu, drusa b'mashu, kane. We're on the top of Nindal and Alf, the top line. When it comes to the windpipe, Nikuva so bichiser, Jusa so bikama. So in terms of a hole, so that is the size of an iser, right? We discussed earlier. Meaning we either the majority of it to be severed as you're cutting through, or a full coin area to be taken away from the windpipe in order for the animal to be rendered a trefa. What about drusa? So, but then the question was asked, but then the question is answered. A mashahu. And the difference is, as we explained already numerous times, when it comes to the drusa, it's not just that the clawing is creating a puncture, but it's also inserting eris, and so therefore the shear is going to be a significantly smaller shear, i.e. a mashahu. My time is here in Mikle Kale V'azil. And the Gemara says exactly what we just said, because of the venom. Yosef Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta Kamed Rav Nachmi Vesef Vekamer. Jusa Sha'amru Tzricha Bedika Kenege B'nei Me'ayim. And so once again, the Gemara discusses whether or not a drusa requires a bedika. And again, I go back to what we said earlier. Are we talking about a bedika for a drusa, for a suffix drusa? Again, like we said earlier this morning, see the Tosfos on the bottom of Nun Gimel Amud Beis for a discussion about that point. What needs to be examined, if in fact an examination is going to be done? So keneged b'nei ba'an, the abdominal cavity, the interior abdominal cavity is going to be checked. And we're looking for a red discoloration. Shamu tzricha bedika keneged b'nei ma'ayim. Amar, in the girsa on the side, Amar le Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman directly turns to Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel, Bar Marta, and says to him, no. Alokim mori be'rav, mikapa v'ad atma. So it must be that it goes from kapa to atma, meaning you have to do an examination all the way from the kapa, which we're going to identify in just a moment, to the atma. Now the atma, we all know, is the thigh bone. So basically, we're going to go from the cranial side, the kapa, all the way to the caudal side, which is the atma. Now, we know the caudal side. We know the atma is the thigh bone. What's the kapa? So my kapa, ilay makapa diada hainu keneged b'nei mayim. Now, if the kapa is basically the shoulder blade, so if that's true, so then there's no disagreement. Meaning, then we're in perfect agreement that the entire abdominal cavity takes us from the thigh bone all the way up to the shoulder blade. That represents the entire abdominal cavity. And the way that Rav Nachman reacted, it sounds like, oh no, you're totally wrong. Well, if that's the parameter, so then there's no disagreement. Elami kapa democha ad atma. So when we say kapa, what we must mean is kapa democha, meaning that it's not just the abdominal cavity, but it's also the entire neck area as well. From the brain all the way down to the thigh, that's the area of the animal that must be examined if, in fact, we are dealing with an animal which is either a drusa or a suffix drusa, depending on the opinions in Tosfos. Now, the Gemara's discussion over here is going to be more or less the same that we just had in terms of which areas of the animal require a bedika. Interestingly, over here, by the way, we're going to get a little bit of a window into Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish, and the relationship with Rav. It's interesting. So, Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef made Aliyah, he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he sees Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and he quotes the following. They're saying, Drusa Shamut Tzricha Bedika Keneged B'nei Me'ayim. Like we've said already, an animal's a Drusa, you could do an examination, look for red discoloration, etc., etc. Amar Lahu. So his response when he hears them say that is, Halokim, Mori Barav, Mikapa Vad Atma. Now, he is quoting Rav. Now remember, what's the story behind Rav? So Rav obviously was an Amora of the same generation of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, first generation Amora. Now we know that Rav started off his life in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, he learned under Rabbi Yehuda Anasi and Rabbi Chiya. In fact, he was also the nephew of Rabbi Chiya. So that's where Rav started, for reasons which I don't know why. So Rav left Eretz Yisrael and he went to Bavel. Right? A number of times throughout Shas, we learned that when he goes to Bavel, so he discovers that the Bavliim don't do it exactly the same way they did it in Eretz Yisrael. Right? One notable example that comes to my head easily is Hala on Rosh Chodesh. Right? He comes to Shul on Rosh Chodesh, and he sees the Babylonian Jews saying Hala on Rosh Chodesh, and he's thinking, like, what are they doing? It's not Yontif, right? It's not Chanukah. like, what are they doing? Okay, and he sees that they start skipping paragraphs. Oh, it's a minug. He understood it was a minug. Anyway, so he left Eretz Yisrael, goes to Bavel. So now here is one of the Talmidim of Rav, Rav Chiya Bar Yosef, who learned under Rav in Bavel, goes back to Eretz Yisrael and is repeating and reviewing what he hears from Rav over to Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. And listen to the reactions. So interesting. So Amar Lei Reish Lakish, Manu Rav Umanu Rav, Velo Yadan Alei. So Reish Lakish says, I'm so happy to hear that you're quoting this Rav. Could you just do me a favor? Who is he? Like, it makes it sound like, you know, there's this great rabbi living in Bavel, and like, I never heard of him. So interesting. So I'm Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan turns to his brother-in-law and says to his brother-in-law, Veloni Hira Le Loso Tamid. So he says, you never heard of Rav? Meaning, let me tell you a little story. Sheshimesh is Rebbe Rabba. So he served Rebbe Rabba. This is not the first time in our Masechta that we heard Rebbe Huda Anasi being referred to as Rebbe Rabba, right? The great Rebbe, meaning that's Rebbe Huda Anasi. And Rebbe Chia, Ve'alokim kol osam shanim sheshimesh oso tamid b'yeshiva, ani shemashti b'amida, uman gavrhu gavr b'kula. And so, and meanwhile, I'm telling you right now, I'm sorry, let me just read that line again. Kol osam shanim sheshimesh oso tamid b'yeshiva, ani shemashti b'amida. Okay, fine. Uman gavrhu gavr b'kula. So Rav Yochanan gives now an unbelievable description of shir. When we were students in Rabbi Chiya Shir, or in Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Shir, so I'm telling you right now, Rav Yochanan saying to Reish Lakish, Rav was with me in Shir, and I'm telling you that Rav was sitting, and I was standing. Now it seems very clear from our Gemara over here, that the Talmidim who had a higher ranking in Shir, so they were the ones who were sitting. And the Talmidim who had a lower ranking in Shir, so they were standing. Now why exactly was that the positioning in Shir? I don't know. I'm certainly interested in hearing a pshat. I don't know why that is. But in the meantime, however, so Rav Yochanan is now educating his brother-in-law, Reish Lakish. This Rav is a big deal. He was a big deal. He is a big deal. So
why is that Rav Yochanan trumps Rav in
Halakha? Yeah, okay, good. Good. It's an excellent question.
Maybe there were only a certain number of seats.
Okay, good. It's good. It's we can speculate. I don't know. So I haven't heard anything. So Gavra Bekula Miyad Pasul Reish Lakish VaAmar Baram Zechor Oso Ish Latov Shamu Shmo Mipiv. And so now Reish Lakish's memory got jogged. Now it's not clear, by the way, and I'm certainly curious. And again, I don't know. In other words, we know that Reish Lakish basically came into learning later in his life. So it could very well be that Rav Yochanan just simply has more experience and more years and more years in the yeshiva, and it could very well be that he knows Talmidim that Reish Lakish just never knew. That could be, but again, all this would be in the world of speculation. I simply don't know. But in the meantime, however, basically, when Rav Yochanan reminded Reish Lakish about this great student known as Rav, who was a student of Rebbe Chiya, a student of Rebbe Yehuda Anasi, and had a prominent position in Shir, so then all of a sudden, Reish Lakish is like, oh, that's right. Baram Zachor also Ish Latov Sha'amu Shmuel Mipiv Shchuta. I'm sorry, Shmuta V'Shchuta Kshera. If let's say the following were to occur, you shechten an animal and post shchita you find now that the trachea is dislocated. And now, when did this dislocation occur? Before the shchita or after the shchita? Now again, that makes all the difference in the world. If the dislocation occurred before the shchita, that is a psul that goes back to Ikor, and therefore the shchita is not going to be a good shchita. If, however, the shchita, the shmuta, the dislocation occurs after the shchita, so then it's kasher. So the Gemara says that Rav states that under those circumstances, the animal is kshera. Shei efshar l'shmuta shetease shchuta. Over here, he makes the following argument. It has to be where the shchita is going to be a kasher shchita, because let's consider. If, in fact, the trachea is dislocated before the shchita, so that means to say that's dangling in the neck and it is not grounded. It literally is not anchored. Literally. So it's going to be moving around and it's not going to be able to cut properly. Whenever you cut something, so unless you anchor the item that which you're cutting, you're not going to be able to cut it. So over here, the argument of Rav is that if I see the dislocated trachea after I shechted it, and it was not dislocated at the time of the shechita. Sorry, it could not have been dislocated at the time of shechita. Otherwise, how would we have cut it? But as I'm sure you're wondering right now, you're thinking right now, the Gemara is going to say it. Rav Yochanan Omer Yaviv Yakif. Now Rav Yochanan says, now here's what we could do. We could do a side by side test to see whether or not the dislocation occurred before or after shechita. Rav Yochanan is assuming that a cut before the trach is dislocated is going to look differently than a cut after the trach is dislocated. And so what you're going to do is you're going to cut afterwards, side by side comparison. If they look the same, check. If they look different, no good. Amar Rav Nachman lo shenu elo shelo tafas bisimanim. But the Gemara says, look, this argument of Rav, that when you have a animal that was shechted, and we find the trachea to be dislocated after the shechita, and the argument is, well, it must be that it dislocated afterwards, because if it dislocated before, how was I able to cut it? But Rav Nachman over here makes the point, which, think about it, it's perfectly logical. What if, let's say, during shechita, you actually held the neck in place? Your hand was literally on the neck, holding it in place. So under those circumstances, we have lost the argument of Rav. Because Rav said, well, if it's not anchored in, so how would you be able to shecht it? But if you're holding it down with your hand, so that obviously is creating the stability. So now when you're cutting it, you can cut it, even though it may in fact be dislocated. So the argument of Rav would only be good if you're not holding the neck while shechting the animal. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end of the sugya. And so a really long discussion in the Gemara about a drusa. The drusa discussion started all the way back on Nun Beis Amud Beis and finishes up on Nun Dal Amud Aleph regarding various problems of having a predator animal clawing its victim. And under those circumstances, the animal being rendered a trefa, possible examinations to be done afterwards, identification of which predatory animals have eris, which ones do not have eris, a really long discussion in the third parak of Eilat Trefus regarding a drusa and also the suffix drusa. Continuing now in the Gemara, we are at the end. We're at the end of the Mishnah, and it's been a long ride. The Mishnah now started all the way back in Mem Beis Amud Aleph, listing off the 18 Trefus, and now the last 2 weeks of the Daf, what we have done is step by step, organ by organ, went through every one of the organs that were mentioned in the Mishnah and elaborated on every one of them to the point where we have like a slightly better understanding of the various trefas that are found within the animal. And now I'm continuing in the Gemara. One last step in the way is Zaklal. Zaklal now is the end of the Mishnah that says that if the animal is not going to live, so it is a trefa. Right, the end of the Mishnah writes, Zaklal, kol she'ein kamoachaya, trefa. Now, you know the rule, as we all do. Whenever you see the word Zaklal at the end of the Mishnah, that is a ribui. It's inclusionary. What is it coming to include? Lasui emai, lasui shev shmaisa. So the answer is very simple. Go back to the beginning of the parak, where immediately after the Mishnah, we were introduced to 7 additional trefas that were taught by the Amoraim. Again, like I asserted in the beginning of the parak, they were Misorah that was given to them. Why weren't they not recorded in the Mishnah? Why were they given to us via Amoraim? Wonderful question. But anyway, those that they're alluded to in the Mishnah with the word Zaklal. Debe Yosef Rishba, Machu Begida, Nashia Vekatle. So Yosef the hunter, okay? So what he would do in order to, while hunting and killing his animals that he hunted, is that he would hit him at the sciatic nerve. Right, Begida, at the gid. Now, the gid obviously is a very generic term describing all different types of tendons, ligaments. But over here, it's talking about the gid anasha. And by hitting, striking the animal on the gid anasha, so that's how they would kill. I'm sorry, it says actually, okay. Begida nasha, vikatle, and kill their animals as such. Also, come into Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, amalu v'chila hosev al trefos yesh, ein lecha ala mashamanu chachamim. So he says, look, here's what we're not going to do. Even though we now know that this is a viable way of killing an animal by hitting it on the sciatic nerve, we're not adding it to our Mishnah. The window is closed on what are and what is not a trefa. What is a trefa? Anything mentioned in the Mishnah. What is not a trefa? I would say anything not mentioned in the Mishnah, but we're going to about to learn a Mishnah together. That's going to give us a list of what is not a trefa. we cannot introduce a quote-unquote new treifa. Now, a very interesting Gemara coming up. Rav Papa Bar Abba, Rishba Mach Bekulya Vekatle. Rav Papa Bar Abba would hit an animal right in the kidney and effectively kill it in doing so. Also, coming to Rabbi Abba, Amar Lo Vechila Hosef Al Treifos Yesh, Ein Lecha Ela Mashamanu Chachamim. Even though that's the way in which you kill an animal, we're not adding it to the list. Vahaka Chazina Tekam Mesa. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have seen empirically that this is the way an animal will die. Answers the Gemara, Gemiri, D'i, Badri, La Sama, Chaya. So the Gemara says, it is not necessarily a fatal blow. In other words, after these kinds of blows to the animal, if all you do is just a little bit of medicine, the animal will heal and recover, and that is not going to be a treifa. So really interesting, what the Gemara now is saying is that, based on their understanding and their knowledge of what is considered terminal, what is not terminal, what is a fatal blow versus what is not a fatal blow, and even as we say fatal blow and non-fatal blow, you also have to take into consideration whether or not we have the medicine in which we can heal it. If we do, so then under those circumstances, it would not be a treifa. Okay, and obviously this opens the door just a little bit in terms of a discussion of what if we have new medicines? What if empirically we see things do not survive, when in fact the Mishnah says they do survive? So it opens the door a little bit, although the halacha is very clear. The halacha, like our Gemara says over here, is we don't add to the list and we don't take away from the list. Keep that thought in mind as we're upcoming to the Mishnah, and we're going to have one of the more interesting discussions in Eilat. I mean, they're all interesting, but one of the more interesting discussions coming up in our Mishnah. This Mishnah over here is going to be a complementary Mishnah to the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah gave us a list of various pathologies that take place in an animal that would render an animal treifa. What we're going to be learning right now in our Mishnah is the contrast, which their organs are going to be suffering, but some sort of injury, but the injuries are not going to qualify and hit the threshold in which the animal is going to be a treifa. Eilu ksheros bebehima. So here now we're going to have a contrasting Mishnah giving us a list of things which would not render an animal a treifa. Eilu ksheros bebehima. Nikva hagargaris, if I have a puncture of the trachea. Oh, shenizdika, or let's say there is a vertical opening of the trachea. Ad kama techsar. Now, what about an opening in the trachea? Rishim Gamliel Omer ad kisari talki. If the size of it is the size of a coin, so in the trachea, that would be acceptable. The animal would not be a treifa.
It goes on the nikav or on the pisacol, on the other one also.
Meaning?
Isari talki goes on nikav or on the nisdak also.
No, it's on chaser. I mean, you're actually missing. You're missing material. You're missing trachea material, cartilage material, on the trachea. So, if the opening is the size of isari talki up to, so then the animal's not a treifa. Niftecha gugolas velo nikev krum shomoach. Let's say the skull is open up, but the membrane is still intact. Remember, we discussed earlier in the parak the two layers of membrane that surround the brain, right? The very very thin lower membrane and the very thick upper membrane. As long as they're intact, even though some of the skull is actually missing, animal is not a treifa. Nikav alev alola beis chalala. If let's say there is a hole in the muscle of the heart, but the hole does not penetrate all the way into the chalal, into the opening, into the ventricles of the heart, animal is not a treifa. Nishbar hashejev alo nifsek achut. Vertebrae is broken, but the spinal cord is not snapped. If let's say most of the liver is removed, but there's still a kezias of liver left remaining, that would be acceptable. Nital hatchol. If the spleen were to be removed, no big deal. Animal's not a treifa. Nitlu haklayos. Now, if the kidneys are removed, the animal is not a treifa. Page 181. I missed one. Sorry. I got so excited by the kidneys. Okay, my apologies. Thank you for following. Nishbar shejval onistak achushla nitla kaved mishari menekazais hemsesu besakosu. Thank you. Hemsesu besakosu shenik vuzelasochze. If let's say there is a perforation between the hemses and the besakosu, so that's stomachs 2 and 3, actually 3 and 2, because they already open up one into the other, so another perforation opening up one into the other is not going to be a deal breaker, will not render the animal trefa. Nital tchov, the spleen is removed, nitlu haklayos. Or if the kidneys are removed, so the animal is not a trefa. Okay, so page 181 in the good book. When I refer to the good book right now, in Chulin, in the third perek, so I'm referring to Chulin Illuminated, Sefer Tmune Chol, written by Rabbi Lack. I've quoted from it extensively. The halacha presently under discussion was one of the most difficult areas of trefas to explain. I'm reading. Okay. Page 181, if you want to follow along or if you just want to look it up later. He quotes in as one suggestion as to explain the Mishnah meaning. Basically, we're looking at I did my research for today, a bilateral nephrectomy, where both kidneys are removed by a human. That's obviously fatal. No human can exist without both kidneys being removed. And seemingly, presumably, the same thing is true by animals. And meanwhile, we just learned together that in the Mishnah, if both kidneys are removed, the animal's not a trefa. So it's very difficult. There is one solution, but it requires a girsa change of the Mishnah. Now, obviously, this is a radical suggestion, meaning this is the nusach we have of the Mishnayos. And so to change a nusach of the Mishnah, because it doesn't fit into our understanding of anatomy and physiology, that's very difficult. And he writes over here that instead of saying kulyos or kalyos in the plural, maybe the Mishnah should read kulya, one kidney being removed. So if one kidney being removed, so as we all know, so that is survivable. A person can survive and an animal can survive with only one functioning kidney. This, of course, is extremely difficult. I'm back to reading. This, of course, is extremely difficult. For if correct, there would have been mention of the removal of both kidneys among the list of trefos in the Mishnah 42a. Meaning, this Mishnah is a contrasting Mishnah to the Mishnah on Membeis. And if one kidney does not render it a trefa, the removal of two kidneys should render it a trefa. And if we're looking at these two Mishnahs being contrasting, so that's very strange. Furthermore, there is no basis in any manuscript for such an amendment, and indeed the Shulchan Aruch codifies this halacha, as is found in our text, that if both kidneys are removed, so the animal is not a trefa. Of great, just one second, I got more information. Of great interest then is a study recently performed in the Netherlands. Now, by the way, this book came out not so recently, not so long ago, but this is now... So this came out about 15 years ago, approximately. Okay, two cycles ago, two Daf Yomi cycles ago. So of great interest then is a study recently performed in the Netherlands where a number of cows had their kidneys surgically removed and were subsequently monitored. Scientists continuously recorded the vital body functions for a full week and found, to their surprise, that the cow showed no signs of illness or irritability, with the sole exception of a loss of appetite. Okay? And then he goes on to discuss. It's possible, again, possible, this has not yet been determined, but it's possible that ruminating animals can, in fact, survive without two functioning kidneys.
It turns out in humans, the colon partially acts like a kidney.
Right.
So maybe in those animals, they have more compensation for the colon.
All right. Okay, fine. What Ben is suggesting, just to repeat, is that there could be that other organs that are going to compensate and provide the function that the kidneys normally provide. It's possible, and read more, by the way. Pages 181, 182 in Rabbi Lock Sefer, where once again he basically goes over this possibility that it's not bizarre to suggest that the animal could function without two kidneys. Anyway, let's continue a little bit further. If, let's say, the lower jaw is removed, remember we described earlier in the Masechta that you can remove the lower jaw and still the trachea and the esophagus is still held in place. Nidla ha'im shala, hysterectomy, if the uterus is removed. V'charusa b'dei shamayim. If, let's say, the lungs have shriveled, but of natural causes, we will describe that better in the upcoming Gemara. Hagluda. Now, let's say what we would consider an essential organ, and that would be our skin, right? largest organ of the human body. So let's say the skin is removed. So would that render an animal a trefa? Rabbi Meir machshir v'chachamim posim. So Rabbi Meir says it's kosher, and the chachamim say it's posim. Machlokas. Okay, and we'll, the Gemara is going to discuss that greater. Okay, let's at least go through the first sugya of today. I know we're late, but let's go through the first sugya of the Gemara. Itmar Rav Yochanan Amar Elu Trefas Dafka, Rav Shimon Malakish Amar Elu Ksheres Dafka. Okay, and now look, here's what just happened. If we could just look at the two Mishnayos that we learned in this first parak, in the third parak. The first Mishnah Elu Trefas. These are the Trefas, and then the Mishnah gives a list. And then the Mishnah we just learned together, Elu Ksheros Bebehema. And then the Mishnah gives a list. Which of the two is an exhaustive list? And which of the two is just like highlights? But the truth of the matter is that there's more. In other words, which is, at what point when Rav Yehuda Anasi was putting these Mishnayos together, which one of these two Mishnayos is really the comprehensive list? And there's room for other things on the other side. So, machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan takes the position that Elu Trefas is Dafka. The first Mishnah is the exhaustive list, which means that there are going to be cases of an animal which are going to be possibly Trefa, but not. And in fact, they're included in the second Mishnah. They weren't actually included in the second Mishnah? Okay. But in other words, the second Mishnah is not exhaustive. Reish Lakish takes the opposite position. Reish Lakish says, no, it's the second Mishnah which is exhaustive, and it's actually the first Mishnah which has other cases that are not actually listed in the Mishnah. Now, b'maikim iflugi b'derav Masna. Now, the Gemara says, now, at the core of the debate over here is the case of Rav Masna. Damer Rav Masna ha'bukadatma d'shav miduch de'trefa. Let's say you have the femur out of the socket. Oddly enough, interestingly enough, not discussed up until this point in time. Because consider, when we've been discussing now perforations and severance and missing organs, but over here, everything's fine, it's just dislocation. It's just that the femur now is out of the hip bone. And so, right, in other words, well, we also, as we're going to see in just a moment, we also tore ligaments. So, in other words, nowadays Baruch Hashem we have the wherewithal where we can handle that. But okay, anyway, so it's so interesting. It really is a new trefa. And so where does it begin? Where does it belong? In the first Mishnah or the second Mishnah? And this is the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan Amar Elu Trefas Dafka Tana Trefas V'Tana Zeh Klal. So Rav Yochanan says the Elu Trefos is Dafka. That is specific. So it said Trefos, and then at the end of the Mishnah it says Zaklal. Now Zaklal is a broadening. V'chazil de Rav Masna. Now, it's an interesting expression as we turn to the top of Nundalam and Beis. Chazil de Rav Masna, the Mishnah saw the case of Rav Masna. Rav Masna obviously being an Amora. It doesn't mean that the Mishnah saw Rav Masna. It meant that the Mishnah thought about the case of Rav Masna, meaning the case of dislocation, and the asib is klal, so my taima, the damya linatule. Because the case of Rav Masna, very similar to the cases mentioned earlier in the Mishnah, because dislocation, it's kind of like natal. It's like missing. Now, obviously, it's not the same, because natal literally means that it's not there. Right? Natal hakaved, the liver is missing. Missing means not there. But the dislocation obviously is not the same, but it's similar, argues the Gemara. So, maitama de damin latule. So, tanu ele trefos, hanihu de trefa, hadarav masnak shera. And that's why the Mishnah went out of its way to say elu trefos. These are the cases of trefos, meaning these, to the exclusion of anything which would be similar, i.e., the case of Rav Masna. That is how Rav Yochanan understood the Mishnah. The first Mishnah comes out now that Rav Yochanan takes the position that a dislocated femur is not going to render the animal a trefa. Rav Shimon Malakish Amar Eluk Sherus Dafka Tana Trefos V'Tana Zeklal V'Chazel De Rav Masna Delo Asya B'Zeklal. And now, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, the way he understood the Mishnah is like this. The Mishnah also considered the case of dislocation. But the Mishnah did not take under consideration that it's similar to any of the cases mentioned earlier, because Reish Lakish feels that the case of dislocation is not similar to Nuttel. My time, lav l'nekuve damya, v'o l'psuke damya, u'l'netule nami lo damya. Look, a dislocated femur. It's not perforated. It's not severed. It's not even Nuttel. It's nothing. It really does not compare to any one of the previous mentioned trefas. It doesn't fit into any one of the categories. So tanu eluk sheros, hanihu dik sheros, hadarav masna trefa. And so therefore, of the two Mishnayos, which one of them is exhaustive? The second Mishnah is exhaustive. When the second Mishnah that we just got done learning says, elu ksheros, these are the ones that are kasher bebehema, that means to say that these are the only cases that are kasher. A dislocated femur that's not discussed in our Mishnah is not kasher, but rather it would in fact be a trefa, and so Reish Lakish is learning that the second Mishnah is exhaustive.
So the worst thing is kosher, and a little thing like dislocated is
trefa. Again, you say little.
Well, the hole, the missing, it's got to be more than that.
Well, I'm happy you said that. Gufa, Amar Rav Masna, Hai Bukadatma, Deshav Miduch, the trefa. So the Gemara once again repeats the halacha of Rav Masna, which is that if Bukada Atma, if the femur is dislocated, it's going to be trefa. V'Rava Amar Kshera. Rava disagrees. Rava says that it's kasher. So again, this machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is going to be the machlokes between Rav Masna and Rava. V'Ifseik Nivi. Now, however, if there's, let's say, the ligaments which held them together, if they get snapped, trefa. V'Hilchasa Ifseik Nami Kshera. Ad dimit akle it akule. So the Gemara says that even if the ligaments get snapped, it's going to be kosher until it's rotted all the way through. Now, when we're talking about the snapping of the ligaments, so we want to see a good picture. Mit akle means rotted. Rotted. If you want to take a look at a picture regarding, I'm sorry, I did mark off the spot. Yeah. You can go. Okay, here we go. You go to page 76 in his Sefer, in Rabbi Lach's Sefer. So over here, you can take a look at the ligament connections between the femur and the hip bone, and he basically brings down the nive. That is the ligament, connective ligaments connecting the two bones together. So he has the opinions amongst the Rishonim. You take a look at the left picture. You see the Rambam, and basically it's the outer ligament. And if you take a look at Rashi, it's the interior ligament that is connecting the two. Okay, various opinions amongst the Rishonim. Exactly which ligamental connection is the Gemara here making reference to? Okay, this will be our stopping point. Let's quickly recap. Today we finished the sugya of Drusa and the sugya of Suffolk Drusa and examinations of Suffolk Drusa. Really interesting discussion between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan in their recollections of Rav when he was a student in Eretz Yisrael under the tutelage of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. The kind of reverence that Rav Yochanan had towards Rav. Reish Lakish ended up coming around on that point as well. A discussion of the end of the Mishnah. What exactly is the Mishnah coming to add? The Shev Shmaisa. What about adding other trefas based on our knowledge of the fatality of certain wounds? Yeah. And the Gemara says you cannot add another trefa. And then the second Mishnah of the Perek, a luxeris, a listing of various defects that do not render the animal a kosher. A seemingly fundamental debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Of the two Mishnayos, the Eilu Trefas Mishnah and the Eilu Ksheres Mishnah, which one is the exhaustive list, which one is not the exhaustive list? A machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and a question of dislocation and whether or not that is or is not a trefa.